This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peake. In this month's episode of Resilient Youth, we sit down with Ron Jackenthal, the co-founder of Live Like Sam, along with programs director Jessica Parker. It has been 10 years since Ron Jackenthal lost his son, Sam, who passed away following a ski accident at age 16. Live Like Sam was formed to inspire and empower young people to discover their strength and purpose. Today, we welcome Ron and Jess on the show to talk about a recent deliberate pivot toward youth mental health in addition to inspiring and empowering our youth. Ron and Jess, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lynn.
Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for joining. We have been partnering on this monthly interview called Resilient Youth. I think over the last 6 months, we kicked it off with your daughter, Skylar, who was wonderful to talk to initially, and we've had various experts on the show once a month since then. So now we're sort of looking back as we approach the end of the year and holiday time at the year and what you've accomplished, what your triumphs and your disappointments are. So Ron, why don't you kick that off and give us an overview?
Sounds great. I think we're really proud of what we've built here at our organization. You know, 10 years ago, Sam was living his best life. He was the men's like overall 18 and under U.S. Junior National Freestyle Ski Champion for three disciplines, slopestyle, halfpipe, and big air. And he unfortunately had an accident skiing in Australia. And after a month in the hospital, Sam passed. And I think as you know, because you were here then, you know, this community really took on our life, like vigils and fundraisers and just being there for each other. And it could have been anybody's kid, and it could have happened, you know, like choking on a checker, right? It could have been anything, but it was ours. And we had the front row seat you didn't want. But what I realized, and my daughter Skylar realized pretty quickly, is Sam stood for this like bigger than life, you know, personality. And he had such amazing and beautiful character. He was so positive and kind and empathetic. And so, you know, as anyone, you know, that would lose someone close to them, you go through your own individual grieving process. You know, and for me, I continued to work in my career the first 5 years after Sam passed. And then about 5 years ago, I realized I wasn't getting under the grief in healthy enough ways. You know, I still wanted to be here. I wanted to live my life, and I wanted to be a dad and a role model to my daughter. So I went away and did work in Tennessee for about 5 weeks and through a beautiful organization called OnSite. And think of it as trauma or grief recovery. And it really was a reset it was a critical reset that I needed. And through the work I did in Tennessee, I started to do a program they have called Life After Loss. And it's for parents who have lost kids. And through that program, which I did several times, I started to realize that 80% of the youth, either teens or in their 20s, that were dying from overdose or suicide. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was really one of the lucky ones. You know, if you had to go through the tragedy of losing a child, mine was living his best life. And, you know, an example, my friend in New York, her daughter got diagnosed with pediatric cancer at 12, went to the best hospital in New York City, and 2 years later passed away. And so we don't live with what if we could have done something where our kid would still be here. But the families who lose their kids to overdose or suicide, it's haunting. And I came back from Tennessee and I started to look around the community, like what's happening in Utah and what's happening in Summit and Wasatch County. And Utah's, you know, one of the top states for overdose or suicide of young people. You know, it's the second leading cause of death, suicide in Utah for teens. And there's just an absence of programs across the country and even here locally. So all of a sudden the light bulb went off for Skylar and I, which is like, wow, what if we went and started a nonprofit that focused on teaching kids self-love, compassion, and empathy, and ultimately creating a generation of resilient youth. And we tried to take the lead on the mental and emotional health crisis that we're facing. And so it took a while to get there, but I feel mm-hmm. really strongly now, like this is a lane we thrive in, and we will provide programming for over 4,500 kids, grades K through 12, this year through no small part on Jessica and her team's efforts. And we're really proud of the work we're doing. And in some ways, you know, the mental health crisis is so big and so daunting that I actually feel like we're still just getting going. And we're 4+ years into this.
Something that is very refreshing about Live Like Sam is that it was based on how inspirational Sam was and sharing his enthusiasm and his compassion that come from where it's a really positive come from instead of a constant focus on the crises that are facing our youth all the time. But it sounds like this pivot that you're sort of making towards this mental health crisis, not that you're changing it up at all, but I'm just wondering the come from and the approach. Where are our children hearing it most loudly?
Yeah, and I'll talk to you a little bit, and then I'll turn it over to Jess because she is in the schools and running after school and in school programming. You know, look, Sam, first of all, Sam will always be 16, right? He is forever, for eternity, a 16-year-old boy, which means he's relatable to young people, right? We're not like a giant hospital system trying to say, let me educate you about what youth well-being or prevention. So we have a very relatable kind of mascot in Sam and what he looks like and what he stands for. And you know, Sam, he was such a force. Like if you met him as a busboy in a restaurant or on a ski lift, you will never forget your interaction with him. His positivity and energy was so infectious that I still run into people 10 years later that are like, you know, I met him. And then they'll tell me a story, and it's just beautiful. We're creating in an unorthodox and untraditional way. We're creating new memories with Sam every day because we're impacting thousands of kids. But it's really great to hear a story from the past that's a new one, right? It's sort of like finding a photo you never saw. But you know, Sam will always be relatable, and there's a cool factor there. So it allows us to, I think, connect to kids and meet them where they're at. And you know, this is what I handed Jess when she came on 3+ years ago, which is we have this kind of this logo and this inspirational kid. And Jess comes from a great background of, you know, programming, youth programming. Like, you know, what can we do with it? How can we leverage these and inspire kids to live like Sam, inspire them to be positive and kind? And so I think we've done an excellent job at that. And it's really because this is who Sam was. And I'd love it if Jess could jump in because, like I
Yeah.
said, she's working directly with the kids and her team.
Great. Well, Jessica Parker, thank you for being with us. So you're in the trenches, it sounds like. So going back to the question I posed to Ron a moment ago, which appeal are the kids hearing the loudest?
The youth that we work with are definitely getting the positive angle. I think that the story about the crisis and our youth mental health crisis is to educate parents and adults about the work that we're doing and the impact that we're having. But youth are getting, you know, Sam's story and are being inspired and motivated to live like Sam through positive programming. The beautiful part about Sam, like Ron had said, is that he lived these values. He lived this way. So we have stories of how Sam lived his life and we have examples that kids can connect to. I recommend everyone Google Sam Jackenthal's bucket list. Sam had this amazing bucket list that he created as a teenager, and he wanted to accomplish almost 50 things before he turned 17. And we use this bucket list, and kids love to read it, and they connect with it. They remember things. If they've seen it before, they're like, I remember this one. You know, they get very excited about it. And it's an amazing example of resilience. Sam chose to challenge himself. So he was creating challenges for himself that were fun. So he was building resilience in his own way without even knowing it, and challenging himself by like wanting to surf a 7-foot wave or hold a handstand for 20 seconds, right? Those things aren't just going to happen. He's going to need to fail. He's going to need to fall often and get back up, but it's fun. And so he's learning those skills through this bucket list, through these fun challenges. And then when he had to face actual hardships and maybe injuries in sports and things like that, he had the skills to be able to get through those in a healthier way. So, we're able to encourage kids and work with kids to create SMART goals and bucket lists. And just in that exercise and in those workshops, they're building resilience in that fun way.
That's so great. I've read that bucket list before. I had forgotten about it. So when kids that you work with, how do they respond to challenge now? Do they have fun challenges in their lives? Challenges that make them resilient when there are these other, especially mental health challenges and challenges that kids face that, we all know that adolescence is just quite a time in our life.
So I think that so some of the challenges that kids are facing, it's a huge range, right? When we do these resilience workshops with high school students, for example, one of the first things I ask them is like, what's something that you're proud of yourself for lately? Something you've accomplished recently? And it can be so simple, like getting up in the morning and getting out of bed. And it can be something that you really worked hard towards. And so you do hear, we go around, 30 plus kids, students, teenagers will share something they're proud for. And I think I start with that because it is a positive spin on the challenges that we face, right? Because the things that they're proud of are the challenges that they had to face and that they were able to see, come through to the other side. And so with teenagers, it is ranging. Those challenges that they're facing are just feeling motivated to get out of bed, are just being on time to school in the morning, not failing a class, being able to remake a test, accomplishing something in their sports. So those are the kinds of challenges that I'm hearing from students in that setting. And then there is also the student that brings up a couple times have had this happen where students kind of bring things also to like the reality of like, hey, if I'm not feeling like doing that goal, if I'm not in the mood, if I'm feeling depressed, if I'm feeling anxious, like I'm definitely not going to be feeling like I want to live like Sam. And so there are those students that are facing those things and they're like, this is actually really challenging for me because I am in this deeper mental health space where this is going to be harder for me to get through.
Yeah, we as parents don't often know what are our children's challenges. In fact, we probably superimpose what we find challenging onto our kids. One thing I think I read on your website, and I just want to ask this question because Sam Jackenthal lived his sports. It was his great challenge and his what he embraced. There are a lot of kids who don't have sport. And I would imagine in Park City, a town that's kind of built around sport, is there something that can easily replace it?
We do have programs that students can participate in after school that could be a replacement to sports. Like our Thrive program is where students can learn well-being skills. It's a 6-week program, and we've just launched a Thrive 2.0. So now Thrive is a 12-week program technically, and students are learning new well-being skills every week. They can take Thrive as many times as they would like for free, and other programs. I mean, there's amazing programs in the community. There's other, there's like art classes and things like that. I think it is so important. You bring up an amazing point that like students, teenagers, youth, it helps students to be resilient if they have something that they're passionate about. If they have an activity that brings about like socialization, community, that they can set goals for themselves within that activity, whether it's sports, whether it's art, hobbies at home, dancing and gymnastics. I mean, it is
Yeah, it
helpful.
must feel kind of nice for those kids to feel like you can pull this focus away from this real heavy sport environment that we feel all around us, no matter what our age is, living in and around Summit and Wasatch County.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, I'm having a conversation with Live Like Sam co-founder Ron Jackenthal, along with programs director Jessica Parker. We're talking about resilient youth for this month's episode on The Mountain Life. Ron, you wanted to add to that.
So yesterday, I had a friend of mine who has an 11-year-old child in the community asked me for advice, and they said their kid is just not passionate about either one of two sports. And what do you think, like, should I let them get out of the sport, you know, because like otherwise they're just at home on their devices, you know? And my advice to them was, it doesn't have to be sport, but wow, you've really got to try to encourage your kid to get into something, because it's that isolation and that deep dive into the tech vortex that is going to end poorly for a lot of these kids. They don't have the life skills. They don't have the brain development yet. And over time, like, if they're not engaged in something social and something meaningful, again, it does not have to be sports. And we're in sports town, you know, USA, but it's gotta be something, right? There's gotta be something where they love and they feel part of a community, because otherwise it starts to open up the gateway to like not being resilient. What do you do when you're faced, somebody offers you substances? Or how do you handle anxiety and depression? And a lot of times, you know, it's the kids that maybe didn't have this type of socialization and sense of community that go down like dangerous paths. So I think we're just huge proponents of getting involved, creating community.
Some parents might argue, and I have a cousin who has a child who went into the tech vortex, and she argues that this is the only community that he has, which is worrisome to me, but you can't argue that he does have some sort of kinship with his online gaming community. And I wonder, that must be a big aspect of what you all do as well, when you're looking at this whole question of isolation. What do you say to parents about that?
It's an interesting question. It's my brother is also like very much in that world and has been since he was really young in the video gaming community. And that is where he continues to find like his community as an adult. So yeah, it is very interesting. I think that while my advice to parents is like, while your kids are under your roof, you get to set, you know, the expectations and the limits. And so it's really important to have conversations with your kids. Create, you know, it doesn't have to be rules and laws that you're laying down, but like laws that you two are creating together, you and your teen and your kid are creating together and coming to an agreement of like, this is, you know, in order to play video games, maybe we need to go and do this before we can do that. So the most important thing is just that parents are having conversations with their kids about these and creating agreed upon contracts, if you will, together.
To Jessica's point, I do think contracts between parents and their children that they come up with together and they collaborate on are critical. And, you know, every kid is different, right? We have a lot of really type A driven kids and parents in this community where like, we don't have to tell them to go take an AP class or to try to get the best grades or to try to be, you know, the top in each of these different categories. Yeah, I just think it's important. I think it's important to have balance, right? Like even Jessica talking about her brother, who's now an adult gamer, it's about balance. And like, do you have a balanced and healthy and well-adjusted life? So I think, and again, with your relative, like, you know, tech isn't necessarily bad, but it's got to be in moderation.
Yeah.
But I do love the idea about having kids have a stake in the decision versus the mandate, which, you know, I realize the mandate doesn't really work and it builds resentment, right? So
I think video games leads into the conversation of social media and phone use. And we teach a digital wellness course. And I have been seeing like teenagers' eyes just opening of like, you know, we're teaching about how our phones are impacting our brains and how they're designed to be addictive, and like what aspects of phones and social medias are making us want to come back to them and are making them addictive. So it's just really amazing education to have, because knowledge is power. And that's what we want to do with a lot of our programming, is provide teens the knowledge that they can make these decisions for themselves. So I think it's really important too to educate our youth on what video games are doing, why they're addictive, why we want to come back for more, how maybe we don't feel motivated after we've spent so much time on social media or video games because our dopamine stores are really depleted and we don't have motivation to continue to do other things like like our bucket list items. And so having a balance is so important, and educating our youth on why we need that balance and why and what are these devices are doing to us is really important as well. So
Kids are smart, and it seems like as adults, while we might not be so smart as the kids, you hear a few of these statistics surrounding our addiction to technology, and you grab hold of those, and it's really good to just run that tape over and over and over. I'm currently in a place where I don't have cell reception. I just have Wi-Fi. I can get cell reception, but I've elected to see if I can actually, leave the place I'm staying and go out into the world without my cell phone. It's feeling better every day. I'm feeling more resilient every day. It's a lesson for all of us, really, isn't it?
it is, yeah. And we have our teens, we have them set a goal for themselves after the lesson. And, because we're talking about how phones are impacting our sleep, impacting just in our moods. And so a lot of the goals that they set are like, I'll be charging and leaving my phone in a different room when I go to sleep. I'll be setting screen times and actually following them and limiting my screen time. And like a goal is to spend, I'm quoting here, one goal is to spend less time on my phone, which at the end of the day, after the lesson, I did set my own screen time limits for that purpose. So we're It's amazing because they can set these tools for themselves and these limitations for themselves. We're just giving them the knowledge to do that. And then they can go and accomplish those fun challenges, and they can have the energy and the motivation to go do those other things, live their lives, and get out there and more, build that resilience in other ways.
That's great. So, Jessica, since I have you on the show, so website livelikesam.org, those for those of you out there who don't know, the program overview includes Thrive, which you've already mentioned, and those are well-being skills. Tell me more about Sages and Seekers.
Oh yeah, we love Sages and Seekers. So we're currently partnering with the Wasatch County Library for our Sages and Seekers program, and it's bridging the gap between generations. Our seekers are teenagers seeking wisdom from our wise sages, who are people in our community who are 60 and older. It's an 8-week program where they meet for an hour and a half a week and build this mentorship. So a thing about resilience is we don't have to do it alone. And if you have the right pillars in your community and through mentors and the people around you, they can help build your resilience as well. So having for teens to have a trusted adult mentor is so key. And they're able to share stories and experiences and teach each other skills and share their hobbies with one another. And they have someone to check in on them every single week. We just had our graduation for class 3 last week, and it was so special. Our teens share, read aloud their reflection letters, and we get to hear how what their perception of the program was. And so many teens were like, this was the thing that I was looking forward to going to every single week. Like, I just was always so excited. And they never know what to expect at the beginning, but by the end, they're like, how is this already over? So we get really great feedback from everyone in the program.
Being able to interact with different age groups, that is sort of a power of resilience as well. And I know that there are kids who don't interact, their grandparents live across the country. They don't interact with people who are older. Yes, they may interact with their parents, but in that one way, and if we're interacting with people of all different age groups, generations, doesn't that say something for how we can go out and then ask for help if we need it?
I think it does. So many kids are like heads down looking at their device that it's an epidemic. Like these kids have lost the ability to socialize a bit amongst themselves, but many of them have really lost the ability to socialize with older people. And it doesn't have to be, like a grandparent. I mean, it's important, right? Because, what's going to separate us going forward, especially in this world of AI that's only growing rapidly, is the ability for human interpersonal skills and communications, like the things that AI can't do. And so becoming, robotic and sucked down the tech hole and not being able to socialize with humans is going to be a real detriment for those that, don't have a profession where they really need to be able to like work with other people. And so I do think it's critical, and I'm really proud of the Sages and Seekers program. You know, we want to find ways to expand it. And again, I think it's telling us that kids are really charged when they get to be around, you know, like another generation. And the people that are the sages, I mean, my God, they get to understand so much. I've had one of my, you know, friends from the community, she's now gone through the program twice, and she calls them her girls. You know, she loves it. And, you know, a couple of the kids have some really challenging stories and some really challenging lives. And they don't have this, they don't, you know, have a, maybe some of them don't have a stable home life. And this is just an opportunity for them to also not feel judged, right? They're coming in clean. Yeah. Everyone's coming in clean. But I do think anything we can do to continue the proliferation of getting kids to communicate one-on-one, you know, with other living, breathing humans is essential to their development, and it's going to serve them well in life. And so that's a mantra we are also very committed to.
Just going to say that some of our Sages and Seekers continue to see one another outside of the programming. They get coffee together. And so it's really amazing to see those relationships like continue.
Oh, it sounds like a great program. Well, if you're interested in the Sages and Seekers program, you can go online to livelikesam.org. Just a mention before we go of there's a Live Like Sam fam meeting at Park City High School coming up on December 18th. That is a sub club of the Park City High School Hope Squad. So it's student led and it empowers dedicated students to shape programs, develop leadership skills, and drive positive change for youth well-being in the community. You can also look that up at Live Like Sam.
Those are all great takeaways. Thank you so much, Ron Jackenthal, Jessica Parker of Live Like Sam. It's been great speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to see you.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment, rate us, and be sure to subscribe to stay on top of all of our show episodes. And if you have an idea for a future episode of The Mountain Life, email us at themountainlife@kpcw.org.